Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's TPSC PDP call on Thursday, the 10th of February, we have Jeff Newman, Alan Greenberg, James Bladel, Paul Diaz, Avery Doria. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. David Maher has just joined the call as well. I don't have any apologies noted, and if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our Thursday weekly meeting. And seems like we have small attendance as well. Hopefully we'll be able to get Alex on the phone. And Alex has raised a new agenda item that he wanted to talk about, but I'll wait till Alex gets on the phone before we go into it. He had sent me an email on it. And I don't know, did he send that to the full group or was it just to myself and Gisela?
To everyone.
Oh, it was everyone. Okay. Good. So once he gets back on, I didn't really, just to be honest, I didn't fully understand exactly what he wanted to talk about on that issue. So, like I said, I'll wait till he gets on, and then we'll ask him. Okay, so we have a couple of action items from the last meeting to cover, and then we will go into some of the new items. You know, we're getting closer to the end, and actually we need to finish these issues up. So I'm going to try to go a little bit quicker and not spend so much time talking about the past issues. So the first issue was, if you look down at the discussion notes, recommendation 31, this is the work team agreed approach that further details and guidance on how comments should be reviewed, as well as which possible tools could be included, or sorry, could be used, should be included in the PDP procedure manual. The work team also agreed to refer to other applicable recommendations if appropriate, and Marika notes that none were found. It was suggested that the language from the GNSL working group guidelines might also be appropriate for inclusion in the PDP manual. Public comments received as a result of a public comment forum held in relation to the activities of the working group should be carefully considered and analyzed. In addition, the working group is encouraged to explain the rationale for agreeing or disagreeing with the different comments received and, if appropriate, how these will be addressed in the report of the working group. So, Marika, do you want to just cover how that's modified and what you were looking for and obviously did not find?
Yeah, this is Marika. I thought we had a recommendation that addressed that issue as well, but I couldn't find anything in particular. So what I did is actually took the language that was in the working group guidelines and added that in modified form to that recommendation so that, you know, in addition to what was already there, which read, the PDP work team recommends providing further guidance on how to conduct public comment periods and review public comments received as part of the policy process, policy development process procedure manual. Such guidance should include the expectation that public comments are carefully considered and analyzed by the working group, encouraging working groups to explain their rationale for agreeing or disagreeing with the different comments received, and, if appropriate, how these will be addressed in the report of the working group, and other means to solicit input than the traditional public comment forums, such as surveys. So that's basically based on the language that's already in the GNSO working group guidelines and adding that element of an additional means to solicit public comments. And then that language would also be added to the procedure manual.
Okay. So that sounds like a logical approach. Is there anyone that's got any comments on that? Does everyone understand that? People following along? I'll take that as a yes. Okay. With no comments on it, let's go to the next comment, which is on translation. And we spent quite a bit of time on the last call talking about this. And what we've come up with is the agreed approach, which was some expressed concern with relying solely on volunteers for translation. It was proposed to add, quote, ICANN should consider the use of volunteers to assist with translation where appropriate. But we want people to comment on that. So spend a couple minutes talking about this and hopefully finish it out, but do people think that we need, I think, James, this was kind of a big issue. You and Paul had raised a comment on this, so are you okay with this wording? Do you want something more definitive on the use of volunteers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine, Jeff. I think I would prefer it to be a little more strongly encouraged. Maybe ICANN is encouraged to consider where appropriate and practical or something like that. I don't know. I think Paul wasn't here on our call on Monday, but, you know, we just did raise the issue of the sticker shock associated with translation services. So.
Okay. Well, let me go to Paul, since you were not on the call, but, why don't you, Paul, and then Alan?
Yeah, okay, thanks, Jeff. Just to echo what James said, I wasn't on the call, but from our previous comments, the push that we were trying to get is, you know, at some point we have to start thinking about all of these recommendations' impact on ICANN's budget. And the sticker shock is pretty shocking when it comes to translating documents, asking ICANN to formally translate more and more documents into multiple languages. And bluntly, I don't see the return on investment in a lot of the instances. Nevertheless, I can live with what we're saying here, with the idea that ICANN is encouraged to or strongly should consider something that's just a little bit more oomph to try and get them to use volunteers when and where available, and not just keep racking up very, very expensive translation bills.
Okay, and so Marika, are you able to real time update that discussion notes, or is that something that's kind of tough to do?
I can't do that on the screen here. This is a PDF document. Sorry, I can include it in the notes section. So,
in the notes section, if you could just change the ICANN should consider to ICANN is strongly encouraged to use. Right. Okay. Now, then I'll take that. Well, Avery's got. I was getting down the queue, so take a look at that language, and Alan, and then Avery, if you've got comments on that. So, Alan.
Yeah. Just a brief comment on the reference to return on investment. I think we have to be candid here, and I'm not suggesting we put this in the report. The return on investment, at least in the short term, is probably public relations and perception of ICANN and the rest of the world. I just don't think there's any other way around it other than that we translate more, and yes, it is going to become a larger part of ICANN's costs. I think that's part of the cost of doing business and putting on the persona of being an international organization open to people who are not English speakers. In terms of the specific recommendation, James had some words. He said where appropriate and something. I don't remember what the and was.
Practical.
And I think that needs to be added based on, because of discussions that at large has been having for years now, but specifically at the last meeting on use of volunteer translation. And the ICANN translation people, have said, yes, they are interested in specific instances, but in the general case, and especially for critical documents, they find the costs are higher that way, just to manage and sort of verify that the translations are appropriate. Most people around the at-large table weren't happy with that answer, but that is the answer that translation is giving. So I think we have to be cognizant of it. Thank you.
So, Marika, can you add to that? At the end of it, it now says where appropriate, and can you add and practical? All right, now I'm going to get to Avery.
Thanks.
Okay.
This is Avery. I guess I agree with Alan quite strongly. I think that it may be expensive. It's something that needs to be included in the budget. There are so many less important things, perhaps, I would consider that ICANN spends a lot of money on, you know, and basically making proper outreach to the world's people that don't have English as a primary language, I think is critical. And I think using volunteer translators is just not a good idea, period. As I say, in every instance I've heard of, it is harder to use them because you got to spend more time going back, and you can't rely on them, and they don't have a firm schedule, and it's just in an organization that goes through as many millions on everything under the sun as ICANN does to say, but translation's not worth it to us, is just really bad press and not something I recommend doing and something that I would definitely have an opinion against. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. And let me go to James.
Hi, Jeff. James speaking. You know, somehow we've gotten into, we've turned this into a discussion of what the approach to translation should be versus, you know, the discussion of whether or not it's important. I think everyone agrees that translation is important. I think we're trying to find the most practical way to achieve it and still have some degree of confidence in the resulting, you know, output. You know, my concern is that when we first touched this issue, some of the numbers that were coming back were staggering. I think that just to translate some of the key documents for ongoing PDPs within the GNSO was more than ICANN was spending on its general meetings or something like that, or on par with that. It was millions of dollars. And so I think that just struck me as a little, you know, I think it's not a question of, you know, is this a luxury or not. I mean, this is a fundamental shift in where ICANN prioritizes its budgets. So my question is, if we are going to encourage ICANN to always use professional translations, then I think it behooves us to tell them where they're going to get the money for that and what other areas of ICANN are going to, you know, be given up to support that. You know, we go from three meetings to two. Do we take away budgets for the various stakeholder groups and advisory committees? Or, you know, where does that money come from? Because the answer can't be, it comes from registries and registrars who pass it on to registrants. I don't know. That's just the numbers that I saw were just staggering. Thanks.
Margie?
Yeah, this is Margie. I just wanted to comment on a couple things. I do think that some of this might be moot in the sense that I know that you know, we're taking a global approach to translation policy, and for a lot of the reasons that Alan and Avery, you know, point out, there's, you know, As an organization, that there's, you know, a desire to come up with a travel policy that works. But as you bring it down to how it affects the PDP process, one of the things that we might think about is if translations is part of our recommendations, how does that factor into our public comment periods? Because for work done under the PDP, because if our recommendations end up suggesting or you know, requiring translation in some way, whether it be the executive summary or the full reports, you know, and we want public comment, you know, that the timing of it really, you know, is impacted because it does take time to get translations, and sometimes that affects the ability to work on a specific timeline. So I just wanted to raise those issues.
Yeah, thanks, Margie. And I do believe we addressed those timeline issues in the recommendations. Marika, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we spent a considerable amount of time months ago on that issue.
This is Marika. We did talk a lot about it, and I think we have a lot of elements in the notes. And in our conclusion, we do talk about the fact that, you know, there are many elements that need to be taken into account, the cost, timing implications, noting as well that, you know, we probably should wait as well and encourage an overall ICANN policy on translation. But we do recommend, you know, translation of key documents, working group charter, executive summaries of initial final reports. And we know that public comments should be received in other languages, and where feasible, these comments should also be translated back into English.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think we can go into much more detail on that. I think we would spend days, weeks, you know, months on that particular issue. So other than Avery, is there anyone else that objects to the language as is in the notes section and on the bottom left of Adobe as currently written? So I know Avery objects to it. Is there any other objections to that language?
I don't think it's going to get anywhere, but I don't object to it. I think, to be honest, I think these decisions are being made way above our heads in terms of what our scope and prerogative is. So I suggest we don't spend more time talking about it.
Okay.
This is Avery. Can I quickly comment? I think it's fine. I just do want to notify that if one of the places where I will probably write comments contrary to the team I was on's work at the end of the process.
Okay. And let's okay. And Marika, when next week when we are reviewing the latest final report, can we just make sure there's an agenda item for those that disagree with certain objections to make sure that they have the ability to make those comments, or how logistically we're going to publish those?
Yeah, this is Rick. I mean, an option might be to have people, you know, file minority statements if they feel strongly about certain recommendations that they do not support, that we basically indicate in the report saying this is a minority statement made by person X who believes that X, Y, Z. That might be a way if there are certain items where people really disagree, as we might not have time to really, you know, have another debate on these issues to really work it out, and maybe try in the after comments and you know, after public comments to see if some of those minority viewpoints can be addressed and a consensus position can be found.
Okay, well let's save that conversation for Monday. I want to move on with the recommendations, but let's just make sure we have a note of that as an agenda item. Okay, so if we go back then to the outstanding issues, we are on page 31 of the issues, outstanding issues, which were updated February 8th, and it's on the board vote. And it says, when a final decision on GNSO recommendation or supplemental recommendation is timely, the board shall take a preliminary vote and where practicable, will publish a tentative decision that allows for a 10-day period of public comment prior to final decision by the board. And then Paul and James responded and said, if you look at the right column, that what's the point of a tentative vote? The board vote should not be taken lightly, especially in an age of significant resource constraints. If the board is looking for input ahead of a formal vote, they have plenty of informal opportunities and communication channels to vet the community's positions. We strongly recommend deleting subsection F. Anybody, any thoughts on, so the proposal is to delete this, this recommendation. Alan?
I tend to agree because I think it's highly impractical. If this preliminary vote is actually a formal action of the board as opposed to a straw poll on email or something like that, which I don't think is something that's going to be reported and acted on, it's impractical. The board meets typically something like four times a year these days, with several months between meetings. If the board met monthly or biweekly, this might be a practical thing to do, but they don't. And this almost guarantees that we're delaying a decision on a PDP for 6 months, so or for an extra 4 months or something. Not sure the merit in it is large enough to warrant that kind of delay.
Okay. Does anybody, I see David agrees with Alan and Paul and James. Does anybody oppose what Paul and James have proposed? Okay. Marika, let's delete it.
Okay.
All right. Maintenance of records. Throughout the PDP, from policy suggestion to a final decision by the board, ICANN will maintain on the website a status webpage detailing the progress of each PDP issue. Paul and James have said they would add that such status page will outline the completed and upcoming steps in the PDP process and contain links to key resources. I think that's a logical and good suggestion. Does anybody oppose that suggestion? It sounds pretty non-controversial.
Question is how practical it is, but I support the concept.
Okay. Well, hopefully we're improving the website and improving the tools and resources, so I think that's a good addition and pretty non-controversial. So someone stop me if you think I'm going too quick or you want to say something or raise your hand. But let me get into the next one. It says, the GNSO policy development process is intended for the development of policies that may become consensus policies applicable to ICANN contracted parties. And then Alan says, shouldn't we include a reference to other uses of PDP as well? And Marika, where does that come up, that statement? Because I kind of agree with Alan. We spent a lot of time talking about other uses of the PDP.
That is at the start of the procedure manual or the bylaws. I think what we basically tried to say there, of course, that's the original intent, and basically to highlight as well what we've spoken about, that for other kinds of issues, there might be easier ways to address those, and you don't necessarily need to do a PDP, which you might achieve through a kind of process that goes quicker or doesn't require all these different steps. I think that's what we're trying to say with that statement.
So I think we spent, and before Alan goes, because I'm going to bring up the same Alan point that he always brings up before Alan brings it up, we spent a lot of time talking about the different uses of a PDP, and we talked about it in terms of when we want stronger consideration by the board or, you know, an increased threshold that the board has to have in order to not adopt it, even if it's best practices or whatever it is. I don't think we should have a statement in there that talks about the intent of the PDP without including all of those other concepts that we discussed. Because I think it's a little misleading to do that. So unless we all kind of think about exactly what we want the statement to make, I mean, is it essential that we have to have that statement in there? Or better yet, why don't we say that that's one of our action items while it's out for public comment, that we basically try to come up with a frequently asked questions or something like that on what is the PDP process, and, you know, maybe in layman's terms try to come up with better words. Marika and then Alan.
Yeah, this Marika, if I can just add something, because, I mean, that is the first sentence of the introduction to the PDP procedure manual, but that same introduction finishes with the sentence, like, although this manual is intended for the development of consensus policies, the GNSO Council may, at its discretion, follow the processes described in this manual for other types of activities that are within the scope of the GNSO Council's mandate as described in Article 10 of the bylaws. So I don't know if that sufficiently balances the...
Yeah,
the two parts.
Alan, do you have any comments?
No, I don't think it does at all. That says we've developed some interesting procedures, and the GNSO may choose to use them anywhere it wants, but the focus of it is these are the procedures we're going to use for a PDP, regardless of whether the PDP is setting consensus policy or not. And I think to leave that sentence at the beginning of that manual is misleading. And I think it's important to fix it at some level before we put it out for comment. Otherwise, people are reading it with the wrong perception, and it's reinforcing a perception that many people had to begin with. So I think that needs to be fixed. It's certainly true that the PDP is the only mechanism that can be used to set consensus policy, but that isn't the only thing a PDP can be used for, and I think that needs to be reflected at the, as Marika says, in the introductory sentence of the document.
Yeah,
the GNSO can also choose to use our really great procedures for other things is interesting, but not salient, I think, to this particular statement.
Yeah, and I want to point out, kind of in agreeing, so personal, not chair or even registry necessarily, but. A personal observation of mine is this leads to a lot of the council debates and a lot of the consternation between people is that there are certain people that believe that the consensus policy or the PDP process is for consensus policies only, And so you get a lot of fighting when it comes to PDPs, both to push for it and both to push against it, depending on which side you're on. And I think what we're doing here is we're setting up a reliable process to encourage good amount of public comment, to also encourage a good, strong process that people can rely on, and in the end, something for the board to very seriously consider, as opposed to at a higher standard and threshold than other GNSO activities. And so I kind of agree that making a statement that just leads to that kind of stereotype, if you will, of the PDP process is harmful and will lead to more fights in the GNSO. So I don't think we should be saying that the PDP process is intended for the development of policies that may become consensus policies. Because I think as this last week or 2 weeks demonstrate, when we were talking about the best practices for registries and registrars, there was a very heated debate because one side really wants a PDP because they want to force contracted parties to do something. The other side doesn't want a PDP because they don't want to be forced to do something. But everyone agrees that the processes and procedures for PDPs in general are better than ad hoc processes and procedures. So if it could have been made clearer to people that we could follow the PDP-type processes but not have to worry about whether it's going to be consensus policies, we may not have had such a strong fight. But that's my own personal view. Again, not a registry view or a chair view. But I think if we basically make it more of a statement of it's a more predictable, reliable way to engage in small p policy development, small p, small d, then that's much better for the community going forward, I think. Anyway, Aubrey?
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you on, and perhaps the only wording or indication that needs to be given somewhere is that either, and I'm not sure whether it's a priori or posteriori, so whether it's before or after the process, but that someone needs to then make a determination, is this PDP for consensus policy, i.e. things contracted parties feel are being thrust down their throats, or is it just recommendation? Is it just, you know, the proper way of working? But, and so if that determination is made, perhaps at the front end, perhaps at the back end, is part of the decision making, but that the process we're creating is neutral in that respect. And so I think I'm agreeing with you. The only thing that might be on Alan's side of the conversation that I'm agreeing with is that there should be some notation saying that someone decides how it's being used, probably counsel. But, yeah, thanks.
Okay. Alan?
I'm not sure what Avery just said, but there was an implication there that up front in a PDP it should be decided whether the output is consensus policy or something else. And I would have thought that's one of the main purposes of the PDP process is to determine what the appropriate outcomes are to address whatever the issue is. We've seen this tendency before to prejudge what the outcomes are ahead of time and restrict them. And anything that smells of that, I really object to, because I think that cripples the process itself. If the working group cannot, in as part of its deliberations, decide what the appropriate outcome is.
Well, but Alan, the other and I'll respond, and then Aubrey. The other side of the equation, though, Alan, is that for things like, let's look at the last example of non-binding best practices, which is what the working group, the RAP working group, had recommended. Knowing going in that it's going to be result in non-binding best practices, I got to tell you, is what was the impetus for allowing it to go forward. If it wasn't known up front, or it was put in doubt up front, then you would not have had the support of a number of the players. And so, to the extent you can up front, I think it's really important to make that declaration so that the group knows its boundaries, and that is important for contracted parties.
Yeah, I guess I differentiate between something whose genesis says this is what we're looking for, and who says, and another case where you're trying to solve a generic problem, and you're prejudging what the solution is. I don't know how one words this, but I see those two radically different things.
Okay, let me go to Avery and then Marika.
Yeah, thanks. Try to be brief. As I said, I wasn't sure whether it was something that was done before or at the end, and I certainly think that you can give a prior impression that we don't believe that this is consensus. I don't think that should be anything that stops the group from coming back with a consensus policy recommendation if it thinks there is one. So I think that it's okay at the beginning to say, we do not believe this is an occasion for consensus policy. I agree with you, Alan. I don't think anything should prevent the group from recommending a consensus policy. Thanks.
Well, presumably,
okay.
We do have all parties represented on the working group, and so if they unanimously or close to unanimously come out with a recommendation, this is not going to be just one splinter party saying this.
Understood.
Okay, so Marika.
Yeah, it is, Marika. I just wanted to point out as well that many working groups actually come up with a mix of recommendations. PDP working groups, some elements might be recommendations for changes to consensus policies or new consensus policies, but a lot of recommendations that they produce as part of that same PDP are recommendations for best practices or for other elements. So I think it will be very hard indeed to define it at the start, and also indeed to add to Alan's comments. Indeed, if you would have a PDP on best practices, but while doing that PDP, everyone agrees there's unanimous consensus that one or two elements actually should be consensus policy for whatever reason. If you restrict that beforehand, it will restrict the outcomes a group can come up with. And I think we need to accept that it's very difficult beforehand to predict what the outcome might be or what is the best approach for the issue you're looking at. So.
Okay. James, Paul, David, any thoughts on this? Okay. So where are we on this statement? Let's try to go back here. Personally, I think I'm not sure we need to write the introduction to the policy manual as this goes out for public comment. So is it just possible to delete the intention for now and then work on it as part of one of our work items while this is out for public comment?
Then I would delete the introduction and say to be completed later. I really have a problem with a misleading and technically incorrect statement in the first paragraph of the manual.
Right.
This is Rick, if I can just make a suggestion, what if we just take out the first sentence of that introduction? Because basically what the then would say is that these guidelines and processes supplement the requirements for PDPs described in Annex A of the ICANN bylaws. Insert the link. And although this manual is intended for the development of consensus policies, well, or maybe delete the last sentence as well, if people feel that is confusing as well, that we only leave that this is should be seen together with the Annex A, and then for the next version, add anything that people feel needs to be added on what the PDP is intended for.
What page is this in the manual?
I think I posted it's on page 58 of the report that's up on the Adobe.
Yeah, sorry, the report I meant.
Yeah, page 58. Actually, I think pull it up for everyone now. We should see it now.
I've lost the ability to scroll.
Yes, you should see now page 58 on your screen, because
it's on my screen, but it's so small I can't read it.
Okay, I'll release it now, and I hope it stays still on that same place so you can
it did.
Enlarge it.
Thank you.
So the proposal would be to delete the first and the last sentence, and that basically only leaves these guidelines and processes supplemented.
If you say may become, among other things, consensus policies, I think it addresses it. Maybe we can refine it, but that would cover it in my mind.
You know what? I would think at this point, I kind of like the just kind of to be provided or something.
Okay.
As opposed to just trying to work this out, because we have a bunch of other issues and we're running short on time.
Okay, I can live with it.
Are you okay with me leaving that sentence that this goes together with the Annex A, so people understand that it's those two elements, you know, are part of the same package, basically?
Oh, yeah, it's just these guidelines and proxies supplement the requirements for PDP. Yeah, leave that in
and
there.
And I just
That's
take
fine.
Out the first and the last sentence, basically.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm trying to read some of the chat comments here. Avery, James, anything we need to bring into these conversations, or are these better just on the chat?
It's probably just better on the chat, just because I wanted to be clear on what I was not picking up on. But I think we're in sync.
Okay, so guys, just point out if there's anything I'm missing on the chat. I'm trying to pay attention to all the windows, and if there's anything I'm missing, just please. Make sure I'm aware of it. Okay, now we're going back to going back to recommendation 6, creation of the issues report. No changes to the bylaws are recommended in relation to the creation of the issues report by the PDP work team. PDP work team recommends including in the PDP process manual a recommendation for the entity requesting the issues report to indicate whether there are any specific items they would like to see addressed in the issues report, which could then be taken into consideration by the council when reviewing the request. In addition, guidance could be provided in the PDP manual that the council and our staff could provide advice ahead of a vote on the request for an issues report whether they feel additional research, discussion, or outreach should be conducted as part of the development of the issues report in order to ensure a balanced and informed issues report. Alan has posted a comment about his confusion, and it says, this section is about creation of the issue report, not requesting it, but it seems to revert to a discussion of what happens prior to the formal request. Also, I note that the council only reviews requests generated internal to the council and not those from the board or ACs. Marika, you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to know that first part of that recommendation has already changed based on previous discussions on where we basically outline which elements should be included in the issue report and which parts of that should be mentioned in the bylaws and which should be mentioned in the procedure manual. And to Alan's comment, indeed, issues requests are passed through the council, but they're not reviewed or voted upon. I think it's basically instilling the current practice, but what hasn't been spelled out in the current bylaws.
Alan, you want to comment on that?
No. sorry, I thought I was looking at everything that had been done at the time that I made the comments, so maybe I missed something. But in any case, The review by council was an error in fact, and I think that needs to be adjusted. And the other part is perhaps more philosophical, but I don't think, you know, a section on talking about creation of issues report should go back and talk about the preceding things. So not something live or die at this point, but I believe it should be corrected to the extent possible. Certainly the reference to council review has to be corrected. The other part... we can do it next pass if necessary.
Okay. Any other comments on that? All right. We ready to move on to the next one? Recommendation 11. Rather than reading the whole thing, let me just Alan's comment is this is the first reference to a preliminary issues report. Do we need to adjust Recommendation 10 to reflect this also, since the 45 days is presumably to the publication of this preliminary issues report? So, again, this recommendation, Marika, you have a comment on this?
Yeah, this is Marika. I've already updated that because I've already started working on the draft. So I've indeed, in where we're talking about what is actually the preliminary issues report, I've already made those changes. And, yeah, indeed, on the 45 days... I understood that as well as being to the publication of the preliminary issues report.
Okay.
Okay, so done.
Should solve it. Good. All right. Policy Development Procedure Manual is the comment from Alan on the section that says advisory committee request. An advisory committee may raise an issue for policy development by action of such committee to request an issue report and transmission of that request to the GNSO Council. Requests for an issues report by the board or an advisory committee do not require any GNSO action, but are to be reviewed by staff and prepared in accordance with Section 6.4 below. And the comment from Alan is, Annex A is unclear on the exact process to be carried out by the AC. It says that the request should be transmitted to the council, but the implication is that staff sees it flying by and initiates the actual work. Specifically, it says that the staff manager will initiate the work based on a properly supported motion of the AC. I would suggest that to the GNSO Council be changed to the staff manager and the GNSO Council. I've made a related change in the paragraph next, in the next paragraph, to reflect the process. Marika, do you want to respond to that?
This is Marika. I mean, I'm happy to add, or I don't have any issues with adding staff manager. I mean, normally if a request goes to the council, we'll see it as well. So, and the
well,
other
yeah, that the current one implied you can infer the staff manager will see it on the council list. I just think it should be, there should be an explicit request, you know, the document should explicitly go to the person who has to act on it.
Right. I mean, the challenge part is, I mean, if you really go down to the details, when it's submitted, it might not be clear yet who's the staff manager. But in any event, if it goes to staff, we'll make sure.
Staff manager is not a term that's defined anywhere. We just use it.
Right.
So
right.
Since we're happy to use it in other places, let's continue.
Right. And what is the other change you're referring to?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think this is actually in the proposed bylaws, I think. I think it's in the section. Currently it's in the bylaws of the process for an AC initiating an issues report. I think. Well, it has to be in the bylaws now. There is nothing else.
Right, but that section has now been moved to the...
Okay, I...
manual.
Wherever I put the comment in my document, I don't remember.
Yeah,
it's under the Policy Development Procedure Manual, so it is in the manual right now. Somewhere.
Okay, as we search for it here.
I don't see the comment in here.
Okay, hold on. Let's see. I'd have to find it. I can find it and get back to you. Or we have 15 minutes. You can listen to me finding it if you want. Why don't you go on? Is there anything else to discuss? Is Alex on the call? Do we have his other item?
Yeah. Well, before we do that, okay.
I'm trying to find it
right.
As we're talking. So.
Okay, Alex, are you on?
Yes, I'm on the call.
Okay, I wanted to just bring up. Good. I want to bring up the issue that you had raised in email. And so just to. Did you set that to the full list? Do you want to just go into that and so we could have a discussion on it now?
Oh, you'd like me to go into it?
Yeah, so you said on email you want to discuss as an item emergent proposals implication on policy work at ICANN regarding the GAC board meeting. So do you want to just go into a little bit
very
about
well.
What you want to... Yeah.
Yeah, very well. I think Avery is still with us here. Our stakeholder group has issued a statement in regard to the proposal that's being put forth, and why I see it relevant to what we are doing is that as we work out all these nitty-gritties and search for clauses we can get, there is a likelihood of a substantial change in the way policy is developed altogether. So as we work out all these nice things, especially on the new GTLDs, if there's a big change from the top to how this multi-stakeholder model works, then it will have a big impact on how policies develop altogether at an overall view. So what I wanted to do is to post maybe our statement or find out what other stakeholder groups think of that looming change that is being put forth in terms of the scorecard. That was the issue. Thank you.
Okay, so I guess if you made the question a little broader, what happens when, if there's a PDP that's approved by the GNSO Council, and there are, whether it's consensus policies or not, and it goes to an advisory committee, or like the GAC, and the GAC provides its advice, what if that advice is contrary or is inconsistent with the GNSO, what happens at that point in time? Is that kind of your question?
That is the genesis. That's really the issue you are talking about. That's the point. Precisely. So maybe open to discussion and find out what people think about that.
So, okay, let's go through what do we have so far in there. We actually don't even have it basically says that it goes to the board, and the board must approve unless two-thirds of a board do not essentially reject it. So practically speaking, what would happen is the GAC would provide its advice, let's say. Then the board would have to, by two-thirds, reject it. Based on the GAC advice, at that point it would go back to the council anyway. So is this something for a PDP that we really need to address? I totally understand if it's not a PDP, but just a regular policy process like the new GTLD process, I do not believe was a formal PDP. So Avery can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was just a regular GNSO activity. But let me ask the question. Do people believe we're covered in PDPs with the provision that I mentioned, that it takes two-thirds of the board to reject a GNSO approval, and then it would have to go back to the council anyway if there's a rejection? Avery?
I actually think that you're right, that we are covered, but I think that's a matter of interpretation, and I don't think everyone would necessarily accept it. Because and the other thing that might open up this hole is that the board has rejected their advice, so in a sense they've already approved the recommendations, and it's at that point. So I guess I would look at it and say, in general, I agree that we should be covered, but I think that there's at least two different arguments that might allow for an adverse decision that did therefore force it back to the GNSO. For the temporal one, is approved by the board. In approving, the board tells the GAC, we did not accept your advice. Then they have their bylaws obligatory meeting to churn. The board is convinced. It comes out of there and says, we amend our previous decision to say ABC. End of story. It doesn't have to come back to the GNSO. One could argue that. I'd be upset and I'd argue against it, perhaps, but one could certainly argue that. And there may be other, you know, ways of looking at it. So I don't think it's explicit enough for it to be secure about it.
Okay, I'm trying to think of, sorry, I'm trying to take your comments and think of what the other side would be. How would there? You're saying that the GAC could argue they give their advice, the board approves it with the GAC advice, and therefore it's binding and it's consensus policy. I'm trying to just think about, I don't fully understand how there's another argument.
There's always another argument.
Okay. Fair enough.
We're not making it explicit enough is all I'm saying.
Okay, and how do you think we can make it more explicit? Sorry, go on.
I'm not looking at the screen at the moment. I'm doing other things, but probably with just a few words in the statement of what happens with it, and that really clarifies the issue. And I'm sorry, I don't have wordsmithing gloves on at the moment.
That's okay. So it's basically just try to help. It's basically if the recommendations, as it gets from the council to the board, are modified in any way, they would have to go to the council, I would say even prior to a board vote.
Yeah, but we have to be careful in terms of the vote timing, because the board could have already voted before it went into its position of not accepting advice. And it's before that was invoked. And so the whole temporal issue of when has GAC advice actually been ignored, when the board takes its final vote. And if the bylaws then kicks in after that, then one could argue that, well, the board did accept, and this is a different event that does not impinge or relate to the PDP process at all, because it's post-PDP process. The board approved it. PDP is over. Now, they might change their mind about some elements of it. I'm not ready to get into the full complexities I see, but at least one or two examples where you could produce an argument that may or may not have legitimacy, but that doesn't matter, that would allow for the decision of the GNSO working groups as approved by the board to then be obviated in some way.
Okay, let me go to Alan.
Yeah, I think you've got to break it down into the various situations. If there is advice from the GNSO, let's say supermajority for the moment, and GAC advice goes against it, the board can reject the GNSO recommendation with a sufficient vote of the board. So it has the right to do that. And it has the ability to do that should there be a compelling reason. It's a different situation to say the board is going to approve something that is different from what the GNSO has recommended. If it's consensus policy, well, we still have a question pending that I don't think we ever got an answer back on what is the board can act, you know, as what happens if it did not get supermajority within council. We still don't know. I don't think we know what the board can do there. If the board is going to approve consensus policy, which is different from what the GNSO recommended, but still consensus policy, as far as I read things, it has to go back to the GNSO. So I think the situation is going to be very depending on the case. And to date, what's happened is these changes have been deemed not to be consensus policy or not to be policy, but in fact their implementation, and the board has free range at that point. So to analyze the situation, I think you've got to break it down to the various component parts, and some of them have to go back to the GNSO. If you want to enact consensus policy, which is different from what the GNSO suggested, I don't see any way of doing it other than to go back to the GNSO. In the other cases, the board has a variety of types of discretion. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out what, if anything, we need to do.
I don't think we need to do anything, to be honest. Certainly not at this go round. If between now and doing the final report, with comments coming back, if the board makes some radical change in the next few months, we're next month or two, we will get some comments back, and we can act on them.
Okay. I think that's the right approach for now, but it's an issue to think about while, again, this is out for public comment. So, everyone, I think we are done with the outstanding issues. Unless there's anything else, the next steps are that hopefully by let me go to Marika before I say anything I regret. So, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. There is still one item, and I've asked James, and I know he's looking into that. There's one recommendation where James was going to suggest language. I think that should appear on the mailing list at some point. And then I think it's as well to encourage, because there are many areas where it basically asks work team members to review the agreed-upon approach and proposed language. So that's another item that, if there's any further feedback or any additional changes to what is in there or anything is incorrectly represented, the sooner people highlight that, the better.
Marika, in
okay.
terms of the change that we were discussing, my last change, there were two of them. One was adding any in action, and in the previous paragraph, I was suggesting that to the GNSO Council be enlarged to the staff manager and the GNSO Council.
Yeah, I found that, so I'll look,
okay.
Look at that. I don't know why they don't come up in the version that's on the screen, but I'll make sure to see as well if there are any other changes that you've made or added so that they should be included in the next one.
Yeah, I didn't actually make, to the staff manager and council, I didn't actually make the change. I said it in a comment.
Okay.
Okay. So that said, Aubrey, sorry, you have another question?
Yeah, just one thing. On that last issue we had, I can volunteer. You asked me what language I thought should be changed, and I wasn't looking at language, but I could volunteer to take a look at it and send something to the list.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. That would be helpful. And then people could see whether any changes are necessary. I think visually, a lot of us are visual people, so that may help. Okay, with that said, Marika, does Monday sound like a date that you could get the final proposed final draft, final report out to us for review?
I'll do my best. If not Monday, will be Tuesday.
Okay. Now, everyone remember the document publication deadline is on the 28th. So we need to the extent you can, Marika, Monday will be great before our call so we can kind of go through it on Monday and Thursday. And again, on Monday the 28th. And this way we can make sure it goes out on by close of business on the 28th?
No, the publication deadline is the 21st.
I thought you said it's the 28th.
No. It's 3 weeks.
Next week is our last week.
Yes. This is board mandated 3...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a week ahead. Right. It comes out... If you can get it out the 14th, so we can get it out the 21st. I'm sorry, I'm a week ahead in my time here. You are correct. So we still have the same amount of time in my head, which is a scary place to be. I don't recommend anyone be in my head. So the 14th will come out, hopefully 14th, 15th. We'll spend the 14th, hopefully, and the 17th, is that a Thursday?
Yep.
On this, and then publish it by the 21st. And I think that's good. I think we'll have made the document deadline. I appreciate everyone's hard work on this. Any last questions?
We're 2 minutes over. We don't have time for questions.
Well, we're only 2 minutes over of the hour time. We technically have an hour and a half, but I... Take your point, and seeing no questions, I'm going to end the call.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Jeff. Marika, you want to stay on 1 sec?
Yeah, that's fine.
And we can stop the recording,
bye-bye.
And then everyone can hang out.
Thank you. Bye-bye.